Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast, the show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. And we are kicking off first of two episodes that will focus on a pretty interesting topic. Jim Gibbons is here, editor.
Hello.
Hello, Jim, editor, writer.
Hello.
Bon vivant. I should have all the Jim superlatives listed out. former enemy of Peanuts, as we were discussing about before we started rolling.
Before I realized, maybe don't make your deathly food allergy your moniker on social media, so all of your enemies have your Achilles heel right there.
I thought it was the opposite. I thought you were being very bold and just putting it out there. This is it. I can't be touched. I'm untouchable. Well, we're going to be talking about what happens after the pitch, and specifically, Jim is going to talk about, from more of a creator-owned standpoint, and Jim has worked on creator-owned titles as well as work-for-hire titles, and then Heather Antos is going to be talking about it more from a work-for-hire standpoint in the next episode. So you can get two different perspectives on two different parts of comics making. And this came up, and it's one that I don't know that we've specifically talked about, you know, kind of diving into what does happen after the pitch, after a pitch happens at a creator-owned level. So, Jim, if you want to kick us off from, you know, from your experience, what you've seen in both as an employee behind the scenes, but also doing your own writing and editing for other folks that are doing creator-owned.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the difference the way I divide it maybe, right, is while in both situations you are being paid by a publisher to do work, when you're doing work for hire gigs, you're more of an employee in a sense. When you're doing a creator-owned gig, it's like you're a partner with that publisher. You own it. You're doing your own project. They're footing some of the bill. But because of that, when you're doing work for hire, and Heather will get into this much more, you know, you're there, they're giving you the schedule. Usually the book, is geared around some sort of, launch time that you don't have any say on. They need the book out by March. And because they need this new book out by March, you're hired at this point. You've got to do everything on the schedule. And if you don't hit that schedule, you can be fired. They can find someone else to do this job for you if you're making that launch date problematic. And many other things that Heather will get into. But when you're on the creator-owned side of things, it's a lot more like you're coming into the process. You want to get the book approved, obviously. And after that happens, after you've pitched and they say, hey, we're doing this, here's the contract, you iron out those details, it becomes this thing where it's all about essentially like learning how to project manage your side of your own project and then collaborate well with your editor, who is like your partner, your project manager on this thing. And obviously this will depend a little bit based on how your creative team works. Oftentimes in creative teams, there's usually kind of a person who runs point on kind of the managerial stuff. Sometimes it's the writer, sometimes it's the artist. It just kind of depends. But typically, to make a creator-owned book work well with your editor and at a publisher, it's going to be all about kind of that communicative project management the whole way through. And it starts as soon as the pitch is greenlit. Then it's like the editor comes to you with a bunch of questions, and then it's like, all right, start having an honest communication with them so you can figure out how to get this book done on time and have everyone happy by the end of it.
Simple.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, the trying to think through folks that are listening to the podcast and what they different levels of experience. You know, a lot of times I know I didn't have a lot of experience working creative services until I really got into working creative services. For as much as you know, going through classes in college, you know, and working with others, I think does prepare you a lot. But to get into the actual working experience, sometimes it does take doing it a couple times to realize, oh, if I only did this, I could, you know, be a better planner, be a better creative partner, like you said, and thinking about it in terms of being a creative partner and what that means to the big broad scale of, you know, what's going on. And, you know, if I meet somebody at Dark Horse at a convention and hit it off, an editor, and hit it off with talking about some project ideas, and, you know, it gets to the point where they say, hey, send me some stuff, and then I get it into them and they're like, hey, I really like this comic book that you've, you know, this concept, And you know, I guess from there, obviously different publishers do it different ways, but how do you tend to think folks could best prepare the editor that they're trying to work with, or the publisher, whoever they have, to make it happen on the back end, and as far as the next step in a pitch that you might not see, but you know you need to think about and be able to be reactive to, because the dark horse editor's got to think about sales and marketing, and the group editor or the editor in chief or whoever is up the chain of command.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things when it comes to getting your pitch approved that I think come into the process, and it really does begin with what are you gonna do, and how are you gonna do it? You know, you got to get the marketing hook on your pitch right. You got to have your sample materials right. You got to invest people in the book, and they think they're gonna sell it. But I think the thing that kind of comes next and is part of the process, and I guess we're going a little past where the pitch kicks in here, but it is kind of the next thing that happens in the pitch often is when it comes to creator-owned books, and I would guess this is pretty universal, but at least it's the way I would work. But once we're kind of through that pitch process, it's always this question of like, all right, well, I'm the editor, I'm talking to the team. When can you guys do this book? You know, when can you actually do it? And a lot of that comes down to people kind of being upfront and transparent about their schedules. You know, like if the writer is writing another book at the time and can't really start on an outline for 4 weeks, you know, don't say you're going to get someone an outline in 2 weeks because all of a sudden everything's off the rails to begin with. You know, these are the type of things that I think editors are going to try and suss out in a pitch process to decide if you're kind of someone who can work with them well and can be honest about, you know, the challenge of the project or the challenges of the schedule. And there's nothing that's going to, you know, kind of be detrimental to your ability to continue working with an editor and a publisher than like really pushing to get the book out on time. You might be like, I really got to get this book out in 6 months because in 6 months it's, you know, my local convention and I really want to have the book out by then. You know, it's like some sort of obligatory or whatever self-mandated deadline. And all of a sudden you're pushing for something for no reason, when often I think the next part of the process is going to be like, if you got to say, hey, I got this, I got this, I can start doing it here. Here's realistically when I can get the work done. And if the artist then says the same thing and kind of sorting out what looks possible, then you're really looking out and you're going, okay, let's build out the schedule. Let's reverse engineer this. That means we're looking at a release date of a year from now or something like that, you know? Like then that same editor can go, okay, let me look at what we're doing a year from now. Let's see what's on the schedule. And then they're probably going to start looking for openings, you know? And a year from now, do we already have, you know, whatever it is, 10 books coming out that month, and the marketing budget's going to be gobbled up. We're not going to have much that we can do to promote this. Okay, what if, guys, can you do it in 9 months, you know? Or should we push it back a little bit? Let's get a little bit more time on our schedule. Everyone can be ease up, and then the book comes out and, you know, easier schedule and comes out at a time when we can actually sell the book more. And I think the thing is like this type of thing, right? And like and when I'm talking about is like a larger, like, you know, planning a whole line at a publisher, but like these are the kind of things you got to think about, because at the end of the day, the editor's coming back to you, and the editor's going to go, they're your kind of liaison and project manager at the publisher, and they're going to come back to you and they're going to go, okay, well, can you do this? Oh, or hey, we really want to get a free comic book 8-pager done to help promote the book. Can you work in a whole new 8 pages to write and draw and color and letter, but also stay on schedule to finish issue 2 by June, you know, as well as getting that done on May, you know? And so it's the thing where it's like those types of requests and things might come in, and those types of opportunities might be there. And if you're behind schedule, you're not going to be able to make that work. And if you're behind schedule on a creator-owned book, you know, you're really only hurting yourself because you're hurting your ability to sell the book. You're hurting the book's momentum if there's a big gap between issue 1 and 2 or 2 and 3. And yeah, the publisher has fronted some money, so you might not take a, you know, financial hit in that sense. But that publisher is going to see that you're, you know, in your work is infrequent, or you can't hit deadlines, and then they're going to think twice. Even if the first 4 issues do well or something like that, then if it comes around to, well, they did it well enough to get a second volume, but these guys were, you know, this team was way behind. Are we gonna agree to do it? Is it what were the profit margins that high that it's worth it to have the book be a little late again or whatever it is. You know, like, this is where it comes down to really starting to understand the process of putting it together. It's project management. It's scheduling. It's understanding every bit of it and then being able to communicate honestly with an editor to get, you know, to get yourself in a position to seize the opportunities where they are, and then also not dig yourself a hole that you're, you know, demolishing the chances for success of this project along the way.
Yeah, it boils down to the thing I think that we return to so often is just communication. And mm-hmm. when you're juggling that many aspects or project managing that many aspects of putting together a comic to get to an editor who's also juggling other projects, who's also juggling all the concerns you just mentioned and has to involve marketing and sales and printing and, you know, production, and then the other editorial side and getting the there's a lot.
there is, and I think one thing to consider too, and I'm kind of approaching this, everything I've said so far is kind of considering as if you came into the project as a team.
Mm-hmm.
You might be on something where you pitch creator own thing, and then the editor matches you up with a writer or an artist, and then the editor is kind of running point a little bit more on communicating between the team. But regardless, you know, when you get to something that is creator-owned, it doesn't have to come out on any schedule, usually, you know. Occasionally, like I said, a publisher will look at the holes in their schedule and they'll want it to fit in one of those, and so they might ask it for a little earlier, they might push it back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's usually, in my experience, creator-owned schedules are built a little bit around like what the creative team can accomplish.
Right.
And if the creative team, if you're, you know, a member, if you're kind of running that creative team, whatever it is, if you give a bad estimate or if you give an optimistic estimate, if you kind of don't communicate honestly what is possible, it's only going to turn out poorly for you. When people have accurately assessed the schedule they can do and come in early, never a problem.
Yeah.
But when they say, oh yeah, I can do it in 6 weeks, and then the first issue takes 9 weeks, and then the second issue takes 8 weeks, and then the third issue takes 9 weeks again, you're like, well guys, this is a problem.
Yeah, that's a funny the way you're kind of summing it up, a light bulb went off, and that's the thing that I've come back to so often thinking about working with clients, is the trust that goes both ways, where
absolutely
clients trust you to know what you're doing and to be able to, in those moments, be able to say, hey, we can't do this, or I don't know the answer yet, but give me a few minutes, or hey, we're going to tackle this in a different way. And I think being able to say that to an editor, to your publishing partner, to be able to say with whatever advanced knowledge, we're not going to make this, this is why we're not going to make this, here's what we're planning to do, you know, does this sound feasible? I guess maybe that's my question to you in that case. Is it just be as upfront as you can, and hey, Jim, this is the problem, and this is what we're going to try to do to fix it, but I think we're going to be 2 weeks late. What does that mean? How do we get around this, or how do we make it the least damaging speed bump we can?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to honest communication. I think a lot of it is, if you also have those project management skills, you're going to be better able to look at schedules or assess the time a problem might take. You know, if you've pitched a creator-owned book and you ask to work with a letterer, let's say, and you know that letterer ideally likes 2 weeks, but you know they can work 1 week, and I'm sure every letterer listening to this is probably going to want to murder me. It's one of those things where you can then be in a position to go, hey, I know this is going to hurt, you know, our letterer schedule, but let me go talk to them. Let me see if they can do this here. Maybe we can get them more time on the next issue, something along those lines, or whatever it is. You might find like an art trick where you're like, oh, you know, actually the sequence could be done, you know, in black and white, and that might help the story. So we're going to do washes here. We're not going to do full colors here, and we can save a little time on coloring. Like, and that's in, these are like, you know, you're not going to run into those types of things often. You know, you're probably going to still need every page covered. You're colored. You're probably going to need, you know, as much time for lettering as humanly possible. But,
yeah.
But the bottom line is the more you get off schedule, the more you have to get creative and the more you gobble up other people's time. So really understanding how to communicate and get the time you need to do your work makes you better to collaborate with, makes your editor happier, makes the publisher happier. And then at the end of the day, what this all comes back around to is it allows you to get the book done with the enough amount of time that like preview PDFs can be made by the design department at the publisher to actually get out to journalists and get out to people to help promote the book. It allows you to not spend time just working and thinking about the schedule of the book and how is the book going to get done, and starting to think about how to promote the book and how to do those next things. So part of that is, you know, if you don't communicate these things honestly, it's going to be problematic. And if you don't have any understanding of how one missed deadline affects a schedule, if you don't really understand that basic schedule building and project management, then you're going to hamper your team every time you miss a deadline. You know, if you hit every deadline, maybe you don't need to know that. But honestly,
right,
it'd be better to know it and still hit every deadline, and you'll really have a better understanding of how the whole process works. But yeah, I think that's the thing, you know. It's that open communication, it's that forethought, it's that understanding that you're part of a whole creative team machine, and that creative team machine is just putting together part of it, and that there's usually designers at a publisher who need to get assets with a certain amount of time to do their job well. And you're going to get better design if you hit your deadlines and get them that stuff. There's going to be marketers and salespeople who, the more information they have on a book earlier, the better they're going to be able to speak to it to retailers and all this, you know? So really, really understanding how your team works, but how your team fits into the larger publishing model, which is all about communication and all about getting your work done on time. And it's all about that, those scheduling and project management skills, hugely important.
And it's funny too, because going back to not having done it and having trying to gain the skill set and the experience, the more you hear people talk about it, I think sometimes can help it be less abstract. I think about stuff like different comics experience workshops where people will, you know, like a Chris Sotomayor will talk about how many books he's coloring and what he's doing, and you know how in that chain when pages are delayed, what that does to his schedule, and you really start to understand that ripple effect. And that was one of the interesting things about joining the Creators Workshop, was to hear a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that might not be very, you know, reader facing. You don't always get to hear stuff because, you know, people don't want to talk about all that publicly, but it's never been in a disparaging way. But you start to hear examples of, hey, this is just the nature of publishing, and somebody got sick, and somebody, you know, just couldn't make the deadline. And you start to hear about all the different pieces and how do you, all the stuff that you've talked about, Jim, to go, well, how do we hedge our bets as best we can, or how do we talk to the letter or the colorist to say, here's the problem, we think these are going to be late, how do we get you, you know, ahead and around that? I know with some of the upcoming stuff that Comics Experience is doing related to editing and project management, like that's a whole course that's coming up where you can go in and gain that practical experience with editors and have those conversations about how to think about that, because there's, you know, there's so many things to think about. Just hearing you talk through it all, there's a lot of me going, oh yeah, and just feeling like there should be a create the spreadsheet to make sure you're ticking off the boxes, because it is a business at the end of the day. As much as it's awesome and comics and fun, you're delivering something to, you know, a creative partner to get out to stores to sell to readers, and that's how you get to go to the next miniseries or keep getting work in comics, is delivering on time and people reading it.
Yeah, and I think one of the things too, and all of that stuff, but I might get the name wrong, but there's also, what's the other Comics Experience course coming up? I was seeing this as I was putting together some notes, and it's the freelance writing
course. Professional freelance writing,
right? And so a lot of that too, right? It's like oh, okay, well it's writing. It's the, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure there's like the thought process like, oh, well, I know how to write. But I think the thing that's the difference here with this type of thing is it's not just the ability to put words on paper or to draw well or to do great visual storytelling, which are all very important for getting hired in comics. I think what the difference here with these things is, it's about collaboration. It's about those professional relationships. If you're on a creator-owned book, that means an editor and a publisher have decided to take a chance on something that's a hard sell. I mean, even if you have an audience, a new creator-owned book is usually, unless it's a spinoff of another more popular creative book, but then you have to, you know, then you're at a position in your career where you're probably doing pretty well and you're not listening to this podcast. but if they're taking a chance on a brand new property, and they're thinking, okay, we need this to be done on time. We need the people to put together a good quality product, but we also need to, you know, be able to have that, have this working relationship go well. So if this book does find an audience, we can produce more of it, and we're not going to have to wait 6 months or a year because the book got so off schedule the first time. And so these are the same types of things where it really comes down to, you know, if you're getting hired on a work for hire book, you know, that's a little bit more like, I think of it, you know, I'll go to a sports analogy, but it can be kind of whatever. It's like, you're like, we need this position on the court. You know, we need a new person to do this because this is the job right here. When it comes to creator owned, it's a little bit more like, all right, we think your team can win the tournament, or however you want to phrase it, right? You're less of a studio musician, and you've more been signed on to have your band, you know, try and be the opening act for something. Or my metaphors are falling apart, but but all of this is to say, it's like, you need to understand kind of like what is needed in each part of this, how that affects how you professionally go about this and work with people. And the thing is, you know, there's just so many little aspects of it. And yeah, the broad strokes are, you know, communicate and get your work done on time and try and understand where everything is on the project. But you know, that's just the basics.
It is a lot that happens after the pitch.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, going back to that, like, and maybe to sum it up in a way, right? Like, when it comes to the creator-owned type of stuff, like, I think, as we've talked about in previous podcasts, it's a much harder sell to get you even through that pitch. But because of that, it's like, it's not like, oh, Grant Morrison, we've hired you and you're a few weeks late on this Superman book, you know, like, that we know is going to sell bonkers numbers. We'll make it work. You know, it's more, oh, hey, this is your first creator-owned book, and all of a sudden issue two is late. Well, this might be your last creator-owned book now. And so it's really one of those things. After the pitch, it's really about setting your project up for success. You know, you've gotten over the first hurdle, but like, the race is long, and you have to be able to keep performing through the creation of the book. And then getting that done on time to set yourself up for the marketing of the book and all these other things. And, you know, maybe I can get a sports metaphor in again here. You know, like, if you trip at the beginning of the race, if it's a long enough race, you can maybe make up that time. But the thing is, if you don't trip, if you don't have those issues along the way, you're going to finish, you know, closer to first place. Note to self, no more sports metaphors.
I think it's all sports metaphors here on out. No, I think it, but it's apt though. It is, yeah. It is so much about team play. It is so much about setting yourself up for success. You got to train, you got to practice, you got to get out there and, you know, do some speed work along with your distance. It's, I'm trying to help, but I mostly have running.
Yeah.
I don't have.
Well, and I think the last thing I'll say, right, is, and I'm sure this is the case as well. You know, I know for a fact it's the case as well on work for hire books. I would guess that this is the case at all publishers. But when you bring in someone, whether it's on a work for hire book or a creator owned book, and that person or that team is getting things done on time, putting in good quality work, like, they're communicating well, you know, that makes an editor or whoever your point person is as a publisher feel better about the project, feel better about working with you. And that's the type of thing that gets talked about. You know, that's the type of things that makes editors want to, like, lock you down for the next project because it was an enjoyable process for them, because it, you know, they got their book done on time, and then their boss is happy that the book got done on time, and then there was time to market the book, so then everyone sold a few more copies, and then everyone's more happy. You know, it's just this thing where it's like, you can start that snowball rolling by doing the right things at the beginning, but you have to come into this situation with skills to do that, because the amount of times that I have, like, taken a chance on somebody's book, and all of a sudden you start working with them, and, you know, whatever it is, a month down the line, a few months down the line, you're like, oh no, This is way off track. This book that I was so excited about is becoming like a bit of a nightmare because it's late, or this person is really hung up on this one thing and that's not really the important thing right now. We just got to get this, you know, that stuff makes it very hard to build momentum for that project, let alone the next project. And I've had people who are like, all right, what's next? And you're like, hey, we're way behind on this. We can't talk about what's next because, you know what I mean? Like, we got to keep this on schedule. And that's not, you know, I've done everything I can to get you guys on schedule. I need you to help me out and do part of it. And that's the thing. When you work with people who can keep themselves on a schedule and help keep their team on a schedule, man, it's like those are the people you want to keep giving work to over and over and over again. But those people don't, you know, happen upon those skills. Those are things they've learned and worked on and they've focused on and studied to get to that point.
Well, if that's that sounds like a great place to end, unless you have more in your notes that I know we've kind of jumped around a little bit in terms of the the step by step.
Honestly, I hope some of this is helpful. It's one of those things where it's like I started talking. I was like, man, I can tell that like little moments of the past that frustrated me are bleeding out into the way I'm probably rambling a little bit here, because it's like, yeah, I wish everyone put the type of time and effort into like being a good collaborator before they pitched a book.
Yeah.
Because then everything afterwards would be so much easier.
I think it's also and to be fair, you know, the first time I had a pitch, accepted by a publisher and learned the lessons that sometimes things don't go even after it's accepted and we're going to talk contracts and, you know, things can fall apart. So that was a good education. And oh, well, there's certainly never a guarantee, but learning how to navigate that end is a whole other thing too. But all the questions that got asked, you know, it does turn into that. And it didn't turn into, do you have any other ideas? But it was one of those like, hey, what if there's a volume 2 and 3? It's like, well, I've thought about it. And, you know, that caught me off guard. And it, again, it mm-hmm. wasn't like I didn't have nothing got published out of it. But it was that conversation of, oh, I should at least have an answer here. Maybe my answer is, you know, I haven't thought about it. Or, yeah, I've got a general plot, or just those steps that you don't go through. So I do think it's helpful to talk about all the things that can come up, because you don't learn how to be a good collaborator until you get into it sometimes and until you mm-hmm. think about it or have that exposure.
Well, and if you don't kind of set yourself up for success with like the right skills coming into a project, you're never going to have that conversation.
Right.
Is what it boils down to. You know, people are going to be like, oh, this was more of a pain to work on than it was worth. I'm not going to bring it up.
Yeah, no, makes sense. Well, Jim, you're no longer on Twitter at Enemy of Peanuts.
No.
You and your newsletter can be found, and people should sign up for your newsletter if they haven't already. I think I've stumped for it before, but it's one of those that you just have a nice overview of stuff. You write with a lot of personality and in a sense of, I think you really get a good sense of who you are, and it's always fun to get that from the Jim Gibbons on Twitter and thejimgibbons.com.
Yeah, thanks. I'm like overdue on one, I think. I'm a few weeks late, so I better do that. Well, but yeah, I'm at the Jim Gibbons on Instagram and Twitter, and also I think we're gonna get this out before Rose City Comic Con, which is this coming weekend on September 14th, I believe it is.
Rose City Comic Con.
And I'll be there. I'm signing, I think we talked about it on the podcast ages ago, but a book called The Legend of Ninkasi, which is a team up between Dark Horse Comics and Oregon Brewers Ninkasi. And it's like a chopping off heads, swords and sorcery comic all about beer. And it was a lot of fun. So if you're at Rose City Comic Con, swing by. Dark Horse booth. 1 p.m. Saturday?
1 p.m. Saturday, Dark Horse booth, Rose City Comic Con in Portland, Oregon. And spell the name of the brewery just so I make sure I understand it too.
Ninkasi, Ninkasi. And it is the Sumerian goddess of fermentation, who also, that's what they're named after. And she also is the lead of the comic. So she's the star.
That sounds really fun. Like, you're hitting any number of overlapping interests of what people might like.
It was a blast, and I'm sure if it's available digitally at some point or whatever, I will plug it all over again because it was a lot of fun, and I hope many people read it.
Yeah, well, go see Jim if you're in the area. I've not been to Rose City. I've never been to Oregon, but it always sounds like such a cool show. So that's awesome that you're going to be there, and people can come catch that amongst other things. I'm sure it'll be a fun weekend because I've heard good things about Rose City Comic Con. That's awesome. I know Heather's been doing a lot of travel to some first time shows, including Boston, and I want to say Fan Expo Canada. So you guys have some cons I've never been to, but sound pretty great.
Rose City's a good one. I always enjoy it.
Excellent. Well, next episode, you'll have Heather talking about Work for Hire as a nice compliment to what Jim's talked about with Creator Owned. And if you have something you want to hear talked about on the show, email info@comicsexperience.com or tweet @comicexperience on Twitter, and we will talk about it here. And until next time, keep making comics.